Welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.harshmantravel.com for their website and buildingfortunesradio.com/harshmantravel if you want to hear the previous radio shows that we've done. It's a Friday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on November 8th, 2024, and there's many things that I cannot believe. Number one, I cannot believe it's darker earlier. I don't like daylight savings time. It kind of reminds me that it's, like, too close to the holidays, and I don't like that it's darker earlier. And you know what? I don't think I'm going to like the prices of live Christmas trees this year because there was a hurricane that hit North Carolina, and many of the prices of the trees grow up or go up, and they're going to use the hurricane, I'm sure, as an excuse to raise the prices of live Christmas trees. But I can tell you that there is one thing that I like, and that is that we now have a new president. So that is a cool thing, which I was not expecting to be able to say when we did this radio show last Friday. I thought they were going to drag it out, and it was going to be a squeaker, and there's going to be a lot of drama. So the cool thing is that drama's on our side, at least if you're on the Donald Trump side. So congratulations for all those people that were rooting for Trump and all that sort of good stuff. And for all those people that are planning on moving away, Harshman Travel is the place you want to go to be able to get that one-way cruise ticket. Just buy a cruise, stay where it is, and then you're okay, Michael Cohen. So having said that, we are here tonight on Harshman Travel Radio Show talking about some really cool things. I have known Pam Harshman and Ron Harshman for a long time, actually way before we even started with Building Fortunes Radio. And I invited them to host a radio show because Pam was really good at building home-based businesses, and she was the perfect sponsor, upline, whatever you want to call her, leader. And when I asked her to host a radio show, she had mentioned to me that she was going to be moving in the direction of a traditional travel agent. And I said, you know, that's really great. And I still wanted her to run some radio shows because she's good at what she does. And I said, you know, people in this world that I'm in, they like to travel. It's part of their bucket list. It's their goals, and they're people too. So as they're people too, I said, let's do this. You'll be the official travel agent of Building Fortunes Radio and everything else that we do. So she obliged. She brought Ron Harshman, her husband, along with her, and they are doing a great job educating our Building Fortunes Radio listening audience on what it's like to travel and getting great deals and all that sort of good stuff as well. So what I wanted to do on these shows is I said, you know, Pam, I want to make sure that people share my level of enthusiasm for how great you are. So I want you and Ron to introduce yourselves, tell us about your backgrounds, and then we'll take a commercial break. And after the commercial break, Ron will give us some of the good news that happens in the travel industry. And today, I'm sure we're going to do the same thing. So Pam, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Thanks for having us again, Peter. It's always awesome, and I, for one, do not mind it getting dark earlier because I am a holiday person, and my trees are already going up, I will confess.
Oh, wow. And
so I like the twinkle in the dark living room. So there are some of us oddballs out there. Anyway, a little bit more about myself is I grew up. Yeah,
I grew up in a middle class.
I was getting ready to fun of that. That's embarrassing. I started my working years as a 911 dispatcher up in the Pacific Northwest, and enjoyed doing that a whole lot. And slow but sure, I worked myself up into court administration, and once there, it was like the epitome of my favorite job ever. However, I happened to have met my husband, who lived down in sunny Florida, kitty corner across the country. And so that didn't work out so well for any long-distance relationship. So I moved down to sunny Florida to be with him. And once down here, I didn't want to start at the bottom of the ladder or anywhere close. And I kind of wanted to veer off and do something more independently, and really to work from home was the ideal. I ended up getting my realtor's license followed by my broker's license, and I sold real estate in South Florida for several years. It just wasn't my niche, so I went back and got my life and health insurance license, and I sold Medicare supplements to the senior population and absolutely loved it. I never knew what to expect when I went out on my calls. For me, it was a very important and rewarding job, just because as people approach their senior years and they go on to Medicare, there's a lot of choices out there. And the decisions they make, their health may lock them into certain decisions. And so that decision has got to carry them through for the rest of their life, basically. And it was important because an awful lot of the seniors, all they get is the Joe Namaths on TV with the commercials. And there's a whole lot of other options that they had. So I felt good about what I was doing, and I never knew day to day I would go out on a call, and I would walk into a table full of ladies that had a full tea party set out, and that's where I would do my little talk with them and answer questions. Other times it might just be a couple, or I've even had people doing a bunco game, and they would stop bunco, and I would go over the information. So it was always the unknown, but one day I happened to have a girlfriend that called me when I was out doing my travels and asked if Ron and I had ever thought about becoming travel agents. And it kind of blew me away because it wasn't even a week prior that we had been talking about it. We were baby boomer empty nesters and had some disposable income. And on top of that, both of us were in jobs where we could set our own travel schedule, basically. And so when she mentioned that, I couldn't wait to get home and talk to Ron, since we had also been kicking around where we wanted to go first and what was on his bucket list versus mine and, you know, all that good wishful thinking stuff. So when I got home, we sat down and talked about it and went online, did some research, and weighed the pros and the cons and all the other things. And ultimately, obviously, we decided to move forward. And we went, got all the training and education we could get our hands on, and then all the proper licensures, and ultimately I would have to say that we have probably done a whole lot more traveling than we would have done otherwise, except for when COVID hit, and that kind of put a screeching halt to travel worldwide even. But it's all back now, and so we're looking forward to getting ourselves back in the travel mode, but we're sure helping a lot of folks in the meantime because they were sick and tired of being shut up from COVID.
Excellent. Okay, good. So, Ron, over to you.
Okay. Good to be with you again, Peter. Very, very happy that rest easy with the results from the other night and the results that we continue to keep hearing. But we can talk about that later. In any event,
yep.
My background is very different from Pam's. Spent many, many years as a licensed clinical psychologist, very heavily involved obviously in my own clinical practice, my own clinical work, but also got very seriously involved in the self-regulatory aspect of the profession. When I first started out, a very good friend of mine, a mentor, suggested that I should really get involved in the provincial association. She felt that I had a lot to contribute and also felt that it would do me well to make the connections and meet the people and all of that kind of stuff, but also to just get a better understanding of all of the self-regulatory aspects. So I did follow her advice. Got very involved in the Provincial Association, was elected to the Board of Directors there, spent a lot of time on a number of committees. Soon after that, ventured forward and got involved in the National Association, the Canadian Association of Psychologists, and got very, very involved there. Was very fortunate to be elected the chair of the applied division of the association. Was on their board of directors, sat on several ethics committees, professional affairs committees, government relations committees, etc. And really got an eye-opener for all of the things that go on behind the scenes that most professionals are just not aware of, regardless of the profession of choice. Most professionals will probably join their national association and attend a workshop or seminar or convention or whatever, and that's the extent of their involvement. A very small percentage actually get involved in the behind-the-scenes workings and get involved in the self-regulatory aspect. So it was very much an eye-opener, very rewarding. I was very, very fortunate and blessed to be, as I say, elected as the chair of the applied division. But at the end of my career, I was also very, very rewarded and blessed to be elected as a lifetime fellow of the Canadian Psychological Association. In terms of my own clinical practice and involvement, I was very fortunate in my undergraduate and graduate training courses to have a number of professors who really hit home the point that if we were even considering going into private practice, it would be extremely important for us to get as much varied experience as we could working with different clinical populations, seeing different life situations that patients could be presenting when they come to see us. When you go into private practice and you hang up your shingle, you're open for business, you really have very little control over who's going to call you, what their life situation is, what their life problem is that they're needing help with. And if you have no experience working in that arena, you can really do a lot more damage than you can do good. So I followed that advice and made the determination that before I did go into private practice, I wanted to get as much varied clinical experience as I could, working for pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems. Spent many, many years in corrections, both community-based corrections and institution-based corrections, working with residential treatment centers for adolescents, doing a lot in the field of substance abuse, vocational rehabilitation, etc. And really was good to my own promise to myself that I would get as much varied experience as I could. And as I say, I did end up working in pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems. When I did go into private practice, I ended up, after a fairly short period of time, specializing working with young couples going through divorce and being involved in custody disputes that were resulting from, unfortunately, the situation that we saw too much of. Unfortunately, we had a lot of very young, immature patients who were very set on throwing away the marriage if it wasn't working. You know, they were very much part of the throwaway society. But the disappointing part, the very heart-wrenching part, was seeing the number of young kids who were treating their own children as the last battleground where they were trying to do as much damage as they could to their about-to-be ex-spouse. And at the time that I got involved, it was interesting because the court systems, both in Canada, where I was working at the time, and here in the States, there was pretty much a foregone conclusion that if you had a young couple going through divorce and there were young kids involved and the participants were fighting over child custody, in almost all cases, the courts were awarding custody to mommy and visitation to daddy. And around the time that I got involved, the courts were starting to see too many cases where that predestination of outcome was not only not a good situation, but it was turning into a very bad and destructive situation. And shortly after I got involved, the courts were moving in the direction of saying that any decision made by the court with respect to child custody and access in a divorce action had to be based on the psychological best interest of the children involved. And obviously that was the correct direction to go. That was very, very sensible and definitely the right way. The only problem was that at the time there was very little collaboration on how one determined the psychological best interest of the children. And as a result, I was very, very fortunate to be involved with a group of clinical social workers and clinical psychologists who were working in this area, who got together and made the commitment to work together and come up with a standardized approach to doing child custody investigations, making the determination of what would be in the clinical best interest of the children involved, and then also being able to go into court not as a hired gun for mommy's attorney or daddy's attorney, but really as an expert witness for the court to be able to go in and give evidence as to what would be in the psychological best interest of the children involved. So I ended up doing a lot of workshops for clinical social workers, also for clinical psychologists, and a lot of guest lecturing at the Faculty of Law, talking to law students about the use of expert witnesses, and I was very, very fortunate to be involved in that whole arena. It was very, very heavy work, but obviously very, very rewarding work, and really felt good about the contributions that I was able to make. And as I said, at the end of my career, I was very, very blessed to be elected as a lifetime honorary fellow of the Canadian Psychological Association. After Pam and I got together, we hadn't been together all that long, when we decided to semi-retire. We were going to move from Southeast Florida over to Southwest Florida. We were going to start raising alpacas, as Pam was saying. She started getting involved in the home-based business, multi-level marketing arena. And although I wasn't involved in there, I was certainly supportive of her doing it. But when she came home and said she really wanted us to talk seriously about the possibility of becoming professional travel consultants, that was something that just grabbed both of us. We really saw it as something that we would enjoy doing. We did the research, made the decision to go ahead and get all the training that we could, and ended up getting the proper licensures. We also made the commitment that we would work hard at finding those travel vendors that we felt comfortable recommending and working with and supporting, because as in with many other occupations, we found that there were a lot of travel vendors that really were not operating with the kind of ethics and concern for their clients that we had, and we made the decision that it would be important to find those vendors that we could align ourselves with. We made that decision, we did that, and until COVID came along, we were very happy with what was going on in the travel industry, in particular the cruise industry. We did a lot more travel than we ever would have been able to had we not become professional travel consultants. But we also helped an awful lot of people make the most out of their travel time and money. Once COVID hit, it kind of put a kibosh on everything. But throughout that period, Peter, you and I kept coming up with our prognostications that the industry would survive, and that in particular the cruise industry would be able to come back bigger and stronger than ever before. And since the end of the COVID fiasco, it has really been nice to see all of the instances where we have really seen our prognostications take effect and be validated, and things are really much, much bigger, much, much better than ever before. Many, many more first-time cruisers, many new itineraries, new ships, new ports of call, everything just really, really moving in the direction of getting bigger and better than ever before. So that's been good.
Excellent. Okay, good. Well, we're going to take a little commercial break. You've been listening. That was Ron Harshman. He's going to come back on the other side and give us some of the good news that's happening in the travel industry. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingel. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we're back. My favorite part, Ron Harshman giving us the good news in the travel industry. Take as much time as you want.
Okay, Peter. A lot of good announcements, major improvements and expansions from ports of call, cruise lines, etc. Port Everglades had its best cruise passenger record with a preliminary count of 4,010,919 guests embarking and disembarking during fiscal year 2024, which ended on September 30th, 2024. The new record is expected to be short-lived, however, as 4.4 million guests are anticipated during fiscal year 2025. The port said, we expected to do well with the addition of Disney Cruise Line to our fleet and a mix of short and week-long cruises throughout the summer. As the year progressed, it became evident that the near-record 4 million guests was well within reach. Cruising is in high demand, and our cruise line partners are poised for greater gains with new itineraries and a variety of sailing dates. In just 1 year, cruise passenger counts grew 39%, cruise ship calls rose 23% as the cruise lines fully recovered from the pandemic. And they're saying that the turnaround port's original record was set in 2024 with 3,880,033 guests in 2014, it took 887 cruise ships calls to set the port's passenger record compared to 648 calls setting the new record this year because the ships are larger. So obviously with larger ships, fewer ships coming in, more passengers coming in. So that was very good for Port Everglades. Not to be undone, Port Miami announced that it had its highest ever cruise passenger total of 8,233,056 travelers in fiscal year 2024. And the port experienced a 12.79% increase in cruise passenger totals compared to its previous record of 7,299,299 passengers in fiscal year 2023. Port Miami continues to break records and upholds its status as the cruise capital of the world. The Miami Dade County Mayor expressed his heartfelt congratulations to the entire Port Miami team and their valued cruise line partners on reaching this extraordinary achievement. Said that Port Miami has not only transformed our iconic skyline and bolstered our economy, but its ongoing commitment to creating more sustainable development ensures that our port remains a forward-thinking, future-ready gateway to the world. So, again, we're seeing the state of Florida really doing a bang-up job with new cruises coming in, and the the records just being set, and as soon as the records are set, they are toppled. Brazil announced a 24-25 season, just opened there, and they are expecting the largest in the past 12 years. And again, they're saying that through April 16, 2025, the port expects about 280,000 guests, which would surpass all previous records. So anywhere in the world, we are seeing the kind of growth and expansion that has just become endemic with the cruise industry. Carnival Cruise Lines celebrated its 20th anniversary of year-round sailing from the Port Jacksonville. And as I've announced on a previous show, it used to be that Carnival Cruise Line was the only cruise line operating out of Port Jacksonville. And starting next year, Norwegian Cruise Line will also be going out of Jacksonville. So a number, obviously, of new possible itineraries, ports of call, new ships, new total experiences are going to be available for the people in the Jacksonville area. And again, in Jacksonville, you've got primarily the Northern Florida business. And it's good to see Norwegian Cruise Lines now going to be operating out of Jacksport. It will certainly increase the business going through that port, and it will make for a much better situation with the new business there and the competition that will come from that. Port of Auckland gearing up for a busy season with over 100 ships scheduled to visit, bringing an estimated 230,000 passengers to that port in New Zealand. So again, we are seeing throughout the world just the expansion of the different ports of call, expansion of the different cruise lines, their different itineraries, and as I've said a number of occasions, we have had the same report coming from pretty much every one of the major cruise companies that a good portion of their present bookings are coming from first-time cruisers. So it's not just people who have been cruising and are committed to cruising, coming back after the fiasco with COVID, but obviously the information, the news, the advertising that's been spread around about the cruise industry and the various itineraries and ships and ports of call that are available, obviously we are getting a lot of interest from brand new cruisers, and as we've talked about before, we are definitely seeing things getting much bigger and better than ever before. The investment that the cruise lines have made in terms of the number of ships that they have committed to building over the next several years, the different ports of call that they are developing and have been developed, the number of new itineraries that are available, are just all together making the prognostications about bigger and better than ever before very much ringing true. We have talked before a lot about the port of Galveston, and it's nice to see that they are prepared to celebrate their 200th anniversary in 2025. And a number of different special days. They've got National Maritime Day in May, Party of the Pier public event in October, Bicentennial Gala also in October, and a port history book being published. They are expecting, over 1.5 million cruise passengers every year. So we have talked a number of times about the expansion of Port Galveston, and it's nice to see them being able to mark their 200th birthday. So congratulations to them. Interesting report came out this week on the three major, let me just get my glasses, what did I do with them? Okay, I had them. I've got them. Okay. I wanted to be able to read some of this report to you because it really talks about the income and the comparison between the three major players here in the North American market, Carnival Cruise Lines, Royal Caribbean, and Norwegian. And they are saying that some of the different income things, numbers, are just astounding. Net income for third quarter of 2023, Carnival, $1.18 billion. Royal Caribbean, $1 billion. Norwegian, $345 million. Net income per passenger day. Carnival was $41.57. Royal Caribbean, $78. And Norwegian, $56. Total revenue. Carnival, $8.9 billion. Royal Caribbean, $4.2 billion. And Norwegian, $2.5 billion. Obviously, Carnival is the biggest, and with all of their different subsidiaries, you're talking about, I think it's either 10 or 11 total subsidiary lines under that umbrella. So you can see it. Interesting number, net revenue per passenger day. Carnival, $152.83, so even though they're the biggest, they make the least amount per passenger. Royal Caribbean, $188.22, and Norwegian is the highest net revenue per passenger day with $211 per passenger day. So just some of the interesting numbers being reported But again, it's just good to see how the major cruise lines have just come back so much bigger and stronger than ever before, and certainly much bigger and much stronger than many people were imagining or expecting during the major fallout during the COVID fiasco. Last couple things, Princess Cruises announced its most extensive voyage yet. They are going to have a 131-day Circle Pacific itinerary departing January of 2026. It's going to be going out of Fort Lauderdale, featuring 60 port stops across 19 countries around the Pacific Ocean, and that's going to replace the previously announced 2026 World's Cruise, which had included stops in the Red Sea and nearby areas, so they had to make those changes because of what has been going on in that area. But anybody who is wanting to or is thinking that they're going to be capable of participating in this 131-day cruise, definitely get in touch with us. We'll be happy to book you. And it's interesting because the Coral Princess will visit destinations across Hawaii, French Polynesia, the South Pacific, New Zealand, Australia, Asia, Alaska, U.S. Pacific Coast, concluding in Los Angeles, and that should be quite the trip. So that's a nice one. Royal Caribbean announced two new Trans-Pacific voyages scheduled for April of 2026, one on the Anthem of the Seas, and the other on the Voyager of the Seas. Anthem of the Seas, an 18-night cruise departing Sydney, visiting Bay Islands in New Zealand, Papeete in Tahiti, concluding in Honolulu. And the Voyager of the Seas, a 24-night cruise departing from Brisbane. They are both departing April 14th, 2026, and this one on the Voyager will be concluding in Seattle, Washington, and it will be going into Honolulu, Nepali, and Kona and Hilo. Anyhow, that's it for this week. Very, very good news in terms of what is happening in a very positive way in the cruise industry. And anybody who is thinking about taking a cruise, give us a call. We'll be happy to do the research for you and come up with some great options for you to consider. In the meantime, everybody, enjoy the outcome of Tuesday's election. Thank the Lord above. I have been saying for the last 3 years, I've said it on many, many postings on Facebook, that I fully believe that Donald Trump was God's gift to America. He was our last chance of reclaiming our country and getting her back onto God's pathway. And now he's even saying that God saved his life for him to be able to save and make America great again. So have a good week, everybody.
Have a good week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Pam. Pam, do you want to add, Pam, do you want to add anything to that? But we're going to be back next week on Building Fortunes Radio. Thanks, everyone.
See you next week.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.